Spider-Man now has a counterpart in India. He's the superhero of the new comic book, Spider-Man India. This series is adapting the comic's characters, costumes, settings, adventures, and mythology for an Indian audience. My guest, Sharad Devarajan, is a lifelong comic book fan and the CEO of Gotham Entertainment Group, which is South Asia's leading provider of international comic magazines. They license publications from Marvel Comics, DC Comics, King Features, Mad Magazine, and Warner Brothers, including Spider-Man, Batman, Superman, The Hulk, X-Men, Tarzan, The Powerpuff Girls, Popeye, Scooby-Doo, The Flintstones, and Wonder Woman. Gotham publishes in India, Singapore, Malaysia, and other South Asian markets in English, Hindi, Bengali, Tamil, and Malaysian languages. Devarajan was born in New York to Indian immigrants. He says that Spider-Man India fulfills his dream of taking an American superhero and recreating him as an Indian boy growing up in Indian culture. In the original Spider-Man, the main character is Peter Parker, who is described in the first Spider-Man comic as a clean-cut, hard-working honor student. He's not very popular, and as one of the popular kids puts it, that bookworm wouldn't know a cha-cha from a waltz. Just to show how old the story really is. Tell us about the background of the Indian character.
Well, similar. I mean, the story that you're referring to by Stan Lee and Steve Ditko is an absolute classic. I mean, it's really one of the greatest things about that story was that it was almost the complete origin of Spider-Man in just one small comic magazine, whereas now stories are much more lengthy in current comic books. So that was definitely very influencing to us as we tried to put this storyline together. But one of the things that we were really trying to make happen here is, as opposed, let's say, to the U.S. edition, most of the Western comic book mythos has been really influenced by the concept of man versus science. And especially the comics like Spider-Man and Daredevil and many of the comics that came around in the 60s were really a result of, you know, man just coming to grips with radiation and atomic power. And how does that radiation affect people? And what are the kind of effects of that? Would it cause mutations? Would it cause superpowers? So unlike that concept, what we wanted to try and touch upon was a chord that's more relevant to the Indian mythos and the concept of man versus mythology. And we've always believed that, you know, this concept of a superhero really relates to a universal psyche that already is there in India through centuries of religious and mythological storytelling that depict gods and heroes with supernatural abilities. So the goal for us was really to try and see if we could in some way kind of interweave this mysticism, this mythology into Spider-Man's very origins. So when you look at, I guess, directly to compare the two, if you look at the Western Spider-Man, he gets his powers from a bite of a radioactive spider. In our version, the Indian equivalent character, Pavithar Prabhakar, instead of Peter Parker, actually gets his powers from a mystical yogi who bestows them upon him. You know, kind of in a similar vein, what we have is the villain, the Green Goblin villain. In the U.S. comics, the Green Goblin gets his powers from a science experiment gone wrong, again, tying it back to the roots of science, whereas we really wanted to bring that home into the mysticism and mythology in the Indian market. So our version of the Green Goblin is actually a reincarnated Rakshasa, and a Rakshasa is a classical Indian demon from ancient myth, so who has kind of been reborn on modern day and gained these powers through that.
In the original Spider-Man, Peter Parker is marginalized because he's nerdy. He's a bookworm. What about the Indian counterpart? Is he criticized for being too smart?
That's right. I mean, one of the challenges was that certainly due to the highly competitive nature of Indian schools, I mean, that's certainly something that wouldn't resonate very strongly with the Indian ethos. Most of the people in India are studying very hard. The reality of what we tried to do with this was we wanted to say, well, since grades are not as fundamentally a negative, let's say, that people are looked at as bookworms or studying too hard. In fact, those are positive attributes in the Indian society. We wanted to find a way to find something that could, again, make the Pavithar Prabhakar character an outcast in contemporary Indian society, especially since the school he goes to is supposed to be a very affluent, rich, upper-scale school in Mumbai or Bombay. So what we've done is we interweaved another kind of cultural element that we feel is taking place in India today, and that's the distinction between the kind of fast-moving cities that are moving ahead at light speed, where the kids and the teenage lifestyle there is almost as contemporary as anywhere else in the rest of the world, versus the villagers and the rest of, you know, Indian society, which kind of lives on the outskirts of the cities and almost in many ways is kind of like in a different time zone. So Pavithar is actually a village boy who is brought to Mumbai and came to one of the top schools there on a scholarship. And because he is very traditional in his wardrobe, he's very traditional in his manners, he's, you know, kind of seen as someone who doesn't really get with it in terms of city lifestyle, he's an outcast for that reason.
What kind of mystical powers do you think you're going to give him?
Well, one of the things is, I mean, since the whole storyline really is about tying it into this mythology and this mysticism, how he will defeat the Green Goblin and how some of his other villains will also manifest themselves will be much more tied to the Indian mythologies. For example, in issue 2, we introduce the concept of Dr. Octopus, who also is one of the villains who Spider-Man India will be facing. And unlike his U.S. counterpart, who has mechanical tentacle arms, the Indian equivalent of Dr. Octopus actually is a multi-handed demon. And if you're familiar with a lot of Indian artwork or Indian mythology, there's a lot of demons and gods and heroes and villains depicted with numerous hands and weapons. So that's something that would be perfectly definitive of the Indian equivalent of a Dr. Octopus, and something we've had a lot of fun trying to interweave into that character.
Now, one of the things you've changed in Spider-Man India is the superhero's costume. You want to describe it?
Completely. I mean, that's been one of the funnest things on how to try and interweave some local elements and some more of the traditional garb that's, you know, it's not exactly what people are wearing in the streets of India today, by no means, but it's certainly more in tune with some of the traditional wardrobe that has been derived from Indian culture. He's wearing in the bottom of his costume, he's wearing a dhoti, which is a traditional kind of trouser, kind of sarong that's worn in India. And his shoes are the classical curved-toed shoes that they call jutis in India.
What you've done is license a lot of characters from Marvel Comics and DC Comics and other places as well, so that you could take superhero stories and translate them in other languages, or in the case of Spider-Man, you can write a completely new version of Spider-Man based in India. Now, tell me if I have this list right. The places
Sure.
that you distribute comics to include Pakistan, India, Burma, Sri Lanka, Nepal, and Bangladesh.
And Singapore, Malaysia, as well.
When you translate American comics into local languages around South Asia, what are some of the most difficult things to translate? Expressions or concepts that don't really have a translation in certain cultures?
Well, I should also preface that saying that English is one of the major languages of the Indian market. So we do also publish an English edition, certainly for the Indian subcontinent, as well as Singapore and Malaysia. And English is probably you have 150 million English-speaking consumers in the Indian market today. So that's certainly one great advantage. When you get into some of the local languages, depending on the language and depending on the market you're in, the biggest challenge we found is particularly with science. I mean, science experiments and, you know, some of the amazing, amazing descriptions that they have in U.S. comics where they'll go through details of a scientific experiment and the radioactivity and, you know, even the extraterrestrial life. Some of those concepts we find a little bit difficult in trying to translate those for, you know, some of the local languages, making sure those same concepts can come through as strongly.
It's not too long ago in the United States that comic books were considered dangerous and trashy, and a lot of parents threw out their children's comics, not realizing quite what collector's items they'd become in subsequent years. Teachers used to scold students for reading comic books. Is there something similar now happening in South Asia where American comics are really catching on? And I'm thinking, too, not only about parents, but about how some of these comics might be seen as violating certain religious principles.
Well, I mean, as you said, I'm sure a lot of parents here regret throwing out the comic books in hindsight. But in India, one of the advantages is there's never been a negative stigma for comics in the history of the culture. There were, at one point, you know, a lot of comic books that were in the marketplace many, many years back, and still some today, that tried to tell mythological stories of the Indian gods and the Indian culture in the form of comic books. And in fact, those were very well received by the major population there and translated into into numerous local languages, and many parents would buy those comics for their kids in, as a way of teaching them the mythology and the culture of India. So thankfully, this generation of parents that's there today in India grew up actually at a time when their parents were giving them these kind of mythological comics to read. So they don't have as much of a negative stigma about comics as you may find in other parts of the world.
Well, I'm thinking that in a lot of American comics, there are female superheroes, there are female villains, there are seductive women, and I don't think that would play very well in Islamic cultures.
Well, certainly. I mean, what we try to do is, and naturally, each of our local language editors are very careful to try and make sure that we do not do anything that is offensive by any means. We have a huge library to choose from in terms of our editorial selections from both Marvel and DC Comics and from the other comic book publishers we work with. So what we try to do is not take a comic book and change it when we're doing these kind of direct translations. What we'd rather do is try to find the right comic book for that audience. So, for example, if you're dealing with a character such as a Batman or a Superman or a Spider-Man, you have literally, you know, hundreds and hundreds of comics to choose from and pick the right editorial for each of these markets that we feel, or each of these languages that we feel would be suitable.
Your company started in 97. Did much of India already have comic books before you started exporting American comics to India?
Well, one of the challenges when we started, there were some locally produced comic books in the Indian market, but the real problem was that, as the Indian audience was becoming more cultured and seeing a lot of different types of media that were very cutting edge at this point, the comic books that were being offered to them, the indigenous local comics, were very poor in terms of artwork and storylines and were, just losing the appeal of the consumer there. The other thing that was happening is, though you had some exports coming from the U.S. market and from other markets landing in the Indian market, the prices were far too high for an Indian consumer to really go and purchase them, or at least for the mass market to really purchase them. An average comic that was being imported or sold here in the U.S. that sells for about $2 to $3 would land in the Indian market and some sell somewhere in the region of 200 to 300 rupees. By contrast, one of the strategies we had was, how do we bring this medium of comic books back to the masses? So price was very important, to price these as local magazines, to get them out there at those kind of local prices at 10 to 15 rupees, which is about 20 to 30 cents. That's what we price our comic books for right now in India. And the second was, obviously, in the local language market, how do we get these comics to be, for the first time, available in these local markets? I mean, one of the most amazing things when we started was that we knew wherever we'd go in India, we could go to some of the most remote places, and there was they would recognize the brands of Superman or a Batman. They'd recognize the logo of a Spider-Man, of a character. They'd know the characters, but they didn't know the origins. They didn't know the background. They certainly didn't know the secret identities, how he got his powers. But there was an innate curiosity to already go out, once we brought these comics back to the masses at affordable prices, to tell those stories.
You grew up in the United States. Your parents are from India. What did they make of your devotion to comic books?
They finally think it's finally paying off, at least all those years I've forced them to buy me comic books, I'll tell you that much. But I think the fortunate thing is I have amazing parents who were very supportive of... I'm an artist by background, actually. I was an illustrator by background many years ago, and before forming Gotham Entertainment Group, from as old as I can remember, I was also drawing. So comic books were one of the I think for most artists, comic books are one of the most amazing finds you'll ever have in the world. I mean, some of the best illustrations you'll ever see are in the medium of comic books. And that really was a profound inspiration to me. And I think my parents also saw that comics were helping me in my artistic development as well.
Now, I know you worked as an intern at DC Comics back in your college years.
That's right.
And I think that's when you first brought up the idea of marketing American comics in South Asia, of licensing the comics and marketing them there. And it worked. You did it. But, I'm wondering, didn't the people at DC Comics or Marvel Comics think you were a little young to take on that kind of job? You were still an intern.
At that point, I think you have to remember back in 97, I think India was a very different place. And I think, they knew also that we had some very talented people behind this company in terms of the co-founder with myself, Suresh Sitharaman, who is also an experienced advertising executive from the Indian market and someone who definitely is very familiar with the hands-on realities of the market there. And I think what made them also very comfortable was that we had a great understanding of their editorial. We had a great understanding of how we were going to approach bringing these comics to the Indian market. And, you know, one of the things is it was a very rough road. I mean, it's certainly still a rough road to bring these comics to a market, build distribution, build the interest in this new medium. So I think the strength of our relationships with our comic book publishers has been because they know that we've been giving 120% of our life to this vision of really being able to build this business. And I think that we have every ambition to make Superman, Batman, Spider-Man, X-Men, all of these characters that we've brought to India, household names by everyone in the Indian market in terms of comic books.
One of your subsidiary companies was co-founded by Deepak Chopra, who a lot of our listeners will know for his spiritual self-help books. I was really surprised to see his name linked to your enterprise. What's his connection to comic books?
Well, as you mentioned, we just formed a new partnership, a new company that's called Gotham Studios Asia. And the goal of Gotham Studios Asia, it's a partnership with Deepak Chopra, who is obviously, one of the leading Indian authors in the world today and, a profoundly creative human being, an amazing man, and Shekhar Kapoor, who is, one of the most prolific film directors of our time. He was the director of the Academy Award-nominated film Elizabeth, and he's done Four Feathers, and he's kind of regarded both in Bollywood and Hollywood as one of the best directors in the world today. So for both of them, the purpose of Gotham Studios Asia is unlike what we're doing with Gotham Entertainment Group, which is really about finding the best content in the world today in terms of comic books and bringing it to the Indian market. This is kind of reversing that funnel, really trying to put together what we're doing right now is building a talent pool of artists and writers together in India that are going to be focusing on, under Deepak and Shekhar's creative guidance, creating the next wave of global character properties, reinventing contemporary Indian popular art, and then permeating this new style and vision to the rest of the world.
How deep into Indian cosmology and spirituality do you think the comics will actually get?
In terms of Spider-Man India, certainly that's not as deep into it as some of the other projects we're working on. I mean, certainly when you bring in Deepak Chopra into the area of creating comics with us and Shekhar Kapoor, you can be guaranteed that they're bringing a whole new level of understanding the mythologies of India and integrating those into these comic magazines. So the kind of storylines that we're putting together for some of our own original content and some of the new stuff that will be coming from Gotham Studios Asia will be deeply intertwined, I think, with a whole different style of storytelling. You know, one of the unique things about Eastern versus Western storytelling is the concept that, in Eastern storytelling, the hero or the character or anyone is really much more infused with the concepts of destiny, infused with the concept that he has a purpose in life that's beyond his knowing and that's kind of predetermined for him. And how one adjusts his own current living with all of these kind of cosmic forces is very important versus, let's say, the Western story arc where man makes his own destiny. You find he forges his own path. He makes, things happen for him. So you have this these two ideologically different ways of telling these stories. And you're finding that even in movies like Last Samurai. You're finding that, in movies like Hero and House of Flying Daggers, which are, resonating here. I think in terms of this storyline or this concept of, man is one in tune with nature and destiny.
Has Stan Lee, the co-creator of Spider-Man, ever seen Spider-Man India?
I don't know, actually, and I'd love to get his feedback on it. I can tell you that much.
I'm sure you would. Sharad Devarajan is the CEO of Gotham Entertainment Group, publisher of the new comic Spider-Man India. I'm Terry Gross.